Hey, Steve here. Glad you're joining me again. This is episode 64, and today I'm talking about becoming a ranger with the Georgia Department of Natural Resources. Do you have some kids in your school who would love to work outside? Do you have some kids in your schools who enjoy helping people? Do you have some kids who would hate it if their day was spent in a cubicle or in an office that had four walls, a door, and no windows? Do you have some kids that you work with who would love it if their office was in their truck, on an ATV, or in a boat? I'll bet you do. Well, today I'm speaking with Ranger First Class Alan Mills with the Law Enforcement Section of the Georgia Department of Natural Resources. Today we talk about what a ranger's life is like, we talk about their responsibilities, and we talk about how you become one. I think there's a lot here that you'll be able to share with some of your students. And think about this as you're listening to Alan talk. Could you find time to invite a ranger to your school to talk with your kids on your next career day? Thanks for listening. Enjoy.
They're not here for us. We're here for them. That's what it's about. Kids.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is all about assisting classroom teachers and school administrators to overcome the many walls or barriers that kids face. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is focused on helping you help kids achieve their dreams. As a note, I hope that you will stop by Stitcher or iTunes and leave me a star rating and a comment. That helps the show get noticed by more people. Thanks for listening and joining me week after week.
Welcome to the Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 podcast, bringing you ideas and resources for K-12 classrooms, schools, and school districts. Hosted by Steve Mileto. And now, here's Steve with this week's show.
Hey, welcome back to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12. I'm your host, Steve, and today I'm talking with Alan Mills, who's an officer with the Georgia Department of Natural Resources. From time to time, I like to focus on possible career fields for teachers to share with their kids, and I can't wait for you to check this one out, because this is awesome. Say hi to everyone, Alan.
Hey, how are y'all doing? Good to be here. Thanks, Steve, for having me.
I appreciate you being here. Alan, recently I heard you talk at a Rotary function in Eastman, and I have to say, if I had to do it all over again, you did a great job of making me want to know more about your chosen career path, and I think if I had heard you speak as a kid, that I'd probably been looking at wanting to become a ranger. Can you start off by talking a little bit about your official job title and what you do?
Sure, be happy to. Our official title is Conservation Ranger. We're with the Georgia Department of Natural Resources, the newly Law Enforcement Section. We've subdivided off the Wildlife Resources. Our granddaddies probably called us game wardens, Possum Patrol, Rabbit Sheriff. Those are some names that pop out. But probably about 15 years ago or so, we actually changed our official title to Conservation Ranger.
Very nice. And we're going to get into a little bit about what you specifically do. But what I'd like you to do is, first, let's kind of talk about why did you choose this field? What made it interesting to you? Is it?
Well, I'm from Georgia, grew up in the rural parts of the state. And so, you know, you remember hearing your family and folks talk about how they used to play with rocks out in the yard with kids and stuff. We did the same thing. You know, I love to be outside. My mother was probably getting on to me more for being outside than staying indoors like some of our children do today. So I just enjoyed it, picked it up right off the bat, you know, was curious. You know, I was like a little kid on Old Yeller. I'd probably come home with a frog or a toad in my pocket.
Nice.
Or something like that. So I just enjoyed and being outside and the creatures that's been given to us and all the resources we have here in Georgia. We're so fortunate and abundant. One of the few states that have mountains, urban plains, rural plains, and even coastal waters. We're one of the few that have all three. So if you like the mountains or if you like the ocean, you can go to either one in Georgia. And so over time, I picked it up and then went from being curious to, you know, well, how can I be a part of this and, you know, and actually help conserve and protect our resources. And so early on, I got to looking into it.
Nice. I can see all that. I like what you're talking about there. You got the out there with the frogs and
that's
everything
right.
else. And, you know, that's, understand. I think the
mom wasn't crazy about it, but yeah, we had a good time.
Nice. So let's talk a little bit about, I got to ask, because what's cool is that, you know, you guys can't see this listening, but Alan has walked in here and he's got a hard-shelled laptop and he had his cell phone. He set those down. He's in his uniform and stuff, but he set those down. And I can't imagine that, you know, back when I was a kid that they were carrying those, because I don't think those existed yet. But this kind of all fits together. Do you have an office with a window and a door and a closet, or is your office your truck or your vehicle that you go out to?
Yeah, that's a great question, because that's everybody asks me, where's my office? It's in Metter near Statesboro, which is about 2 hours away. Okay. So I go there about once a month, or unless I get caught up on the carpet for something. So yes, we work, live, sleep, breathe out of our vehicles. And over time, they've gotten much better. You know, we've got some really nice vehicles now. But yeah, we have a laptop that's GPS plugged in. It's got, you know, wireless internet, so we can do anything from running driver's license history, see if you got warrants,
wow,
to pulling up stuff, to we actually very seldom write handwritten citations and warnings anymore. It's all computer driven, and we got printers in our truck, and we wow, spit them out, which is good for some folks because my chicken scratch is hard to read. So that's definitely a bonus from our standpoint. But yeah, technology is really caught up, and I guess with us being an outdoor agency, we were probably a little slower to the party. But between, like you say, cell phones, links, wireless computers, technology drives what we do. And I couldn't imagine doing now what we do. But before, you know, I've been on 23 years, so when they handed me a computer and said, here you go, I was one of those little more reluctant because I was afraid I was going to blow the world up, you know, by punching the wrong button. So,
gotcha. You had a little learning curve there going on.
Big learning curve for me. That's right.
Well, let's get into how you become an officer. Is there an academy that you attend? Are there certain specific requirements for consideration for admission? Or how do you go, if someone was interested in trying to become one, what are some of the, how do they become an officer?
Right. I think we talked about this
Ranger
at the Rotary Club that time. If you can get on with us, you're employable, because the minimum requirements that we have such high standards for multiple reasons. Once you're a state law enforcement officer, and I tell folks, you can do a lot of things, you can lose a lot of things, but when you lose your integrity and credibility with the public, you know, as a state law enforcement officer, especially with DNR, you know, you've lost everything, because if people no longer trust you and identify you with being right, above standard. So we set our standards really high. We start off, you put in a general application just like anyone else. Of course, it's scrutinized. There's minimum requirements. We now require minimum of 2 years of college, preferably either in some type of wildlife
gotcha,
based, like mine was in wildlife technology, or criminal justice. You know, underwater basket weaving, you have a master's in that. That's not going to go far with
help
us, okay? So it's got to be close. Then we also now require that you already be post-certified. There are private academies you can go to, or if you get on with a smaller agency like a city police department or a county agency, okay, you can get post-certified, and then that puts you one step closer to us. So there's two requirements there that you've got to have before you'll ever even make the next phases. The next phases that kick in is they do an extensive criminal history background check on you. It seems like they ask you to put down three or four non-relative people to put down. They call them so they can get three or four people they know to call and ask about you.
Nice.
So they do an extensive background. You're not going to put down your three best buddies and skim by it. They also do a polygraph on you. And, you know, it's not admissible in court, but it is a tool that they use to weed folks out. And, again, I think we talked about this earlier. If you got a dozen positions and you got thousands of people entering and you got one person that pegged out on the truth meter and then you got several others that was kind of in that gray, you know, they'll go to the truth meter,
gotcha,
and say, well, you know, we can go with these.
Nice.
So there's just levels that weed you out. Once you get to that point, then you go to an interview phase And they'll put you under a little bit of stress and tension because they want to see how you react under pressure, because there's times, you know, the heat of the moment, we have to make snap decisions,
right,
split-second decisions under some tremendous stress. So they're going to put you under a little bit of stress, make you feel a little bit uncomfortable in an interview. Then you also have to do physical agility tests. You have to be able to swim. You have to be able to run 3/4 mile, obstacle course, through the woods, you know, and successfully complete that in a timed manner. It's all based on what we do. A lot of folks don't realize, but our new motto, I guess you could say, is law enforcement off the pavement. And what that says to me is we're out there alone. There's times that right, I couldn't tell you how to get to me. I just know how I got there. And so you may be 2 miles from the nearest road and you've walked way back in somewhere and now you're running a guy down. And so physical fitness, you know, strong mentality, those are all key qualities in becoming a ranger. And so I guess if you say, well, if I meet all those hurdles, then there's a lot of other people that would be more than willing to employ you as well. So
most definitely
keep your nose clean. You know, you get in trouble. School, you know, we're here with Risa. High marks mean well, because it, not only does it mean that you're willing to learn, it means that you have dedication and willingness to take that extra step when you make all A's in school and stuff. So that's part of your character. So when you make straight A's, you're not in trouble with drugs, you know, your teachers look at you and say, yeah, that's one of my model students. You're what DNR is looking for.
Nice. So is it a, once you get accepted, do you take like a series of courses that, you know, would it take you a year, 2 years to complete, or is it
that type of category? I apologize for leaving that part out.
That's
yeah,
right.
Once you're considered employed with DNR, then we have what we call a conservation ranger school. It's in Forsyth. It's at the Georgia Public Safety Training Center. We got an acronym for it. We call it GIPSTIC. You will spend 20 weeks there.
Okay.
And before you go there with law enforcement, you know, we're talking about being post-certified, you go 11, 13 weeks of just police officer training. Well, we're saying you're already going to have that. And then you're going to go 20 weeks with us. And that's anything from learning how to tell the difference between a dog track and a cat track, you know, deer track. You know, we have some folks that didn't grow up hunting and fishing, and so they have to learn, you know, what different things even look like, ducks and so forth. And then they do boating, safety stuff, ATV training. I mean, just run the gamut. We got four-wheel drives, ATVs, boats, airplanes. You know, we're well-versed in equipment, so we have to make sure you can properly operate and function in and around those items. And then once you complete the 20-week course, then you go what we call a FTO program. There's a field training officer that you will ride with for a minimum of 18 months. At the end of that 18 months, if that field training officer signs off on you and says, yeah, he's ready, then you can start working in the field. If he decides you need a little more tutelage in certain areas, then they don't sign off on you and they continue to work on you. Maybe you weren't as efficient in waterfowl season or something because you didn't know how to identify ducks or whatever. They'll continue to work with you, and at some point in time they'll sign off. So from beginning of the application to the time they say, okay, you're good to go on your own, could be a couple of years.
Gotcha. Awesome. We're going to get into some of this in a little bit, because right off the bat I'm going to ask you about job responsibilities.
Sure.
But there's just all kinds of thoughts there, and a big part of that is that, you know, just like you were saying, first of all, what a cool, there are not many jobs that can boast that you have to be tested on an ATV, driving different sorts of outdoor vehicles, which is that's to me, that would be an attractive aspect of this. Is that
right? Yeah,
you are.
That's correct. If you like warm climate and a controlled environment, such as a warehouse or something, we're not the job you're looking for. We have a they dress us well. We have boots, tennis shoes, rubber boots, multiple kinds of jackets, rain gear. You never know. And one of the things we do, you know, not knocking any other agency, you know, we call the Georgia State Patrol our brother or sister agency. but they're limited in how they can access you, because when you've got a, you know, a Charger or a Mustang or something, you can only go so many places.
Right.
But with four-wheel drive trucks, ATVs, boats, when hurricanes, tornadoes, ice storms, when those things hit and things slow down and you're in trouble and you need help, and we're usually the agency that, that responds, because nice. We can just get there. We've been trained to get there. And back in the old days, I've heard a lot of people say that they'd never saw a game warden unless it was too late. In other words, it, you know, you had done something you weren't supposed to. And we did. We prided ourselves in a bit being quite stealthy and sitting back and watching. But we lost the public's trust and knowledge of us by doing that, because gotcha. it turned to where they only saw us when things were going wrong or right. bad. So we started a new philosophy on things. Let's get out above, ahead of the curve, and like doing like today, speaking with you. I try to do talks at Rotary clubs and school to reintroduce ourselves to the public. And I can't tell you how many folks we've run across that say, I didn't know that.
Imagine.
And so we do so many good, positive things in our communities that, and, you know, unless you're the recipient of it, you never know that, man, those guys, they get with it and they go. So if you like helping people, if you like being outside, you know, we're out at daylight sometimes, out after dark sometimes, you know, you get to see every critter and creature you can think of. If you like being outside and working with nature and helping conserve it, you know, we're what you're looking for.
Nice. So tell me what some of your responsibilities are. I think that's a good segue into that.
Sure.
What is it that when you are out there and about, what are some of those key areas that you focus
right.
on?
Right. Our main function, or our vision statement for the department, and I'll just read it to you. The vision of the Law Enforcement Division is to ensure that Georgia's natural resources will be conserved for our present and future generations. So we're out there to make sure that that certain species of plant or that certain animal isn't over-harvested or treated badly or whatever, not just because of that animal or plant. It's because, you know, we want our grandchildren and great-grandchildren to have those species around for
right.
them, you know.
Right.
And, you know, we all know that this, you know, life is a web. You know, lots of things are interactive and interchanged and meshed together. And so it's all connected. And so we can't just let certain species go by the wayside, because they're a part of us. They're a part of Georgia.
Makes sense.
And so that's what we try to do. And so the way we do that is we try to maintain public support through fair and vigorous law enforcement, quality education, and community involvement like we're doing now. So that's how we tell folks who we are. Part of our actual job responsibilities is endless. People say, well, can a game warden stop you for speeding? Well, technically, yes. If it's a state law, a law, we can enforce it. Now, we don't run around with radars on our four-wheel drive trucks, and that would be inappropriate. But we do assist a lot of other agencies with other things, road checks. If he's in trouble or got, you know, four or five people standing on the side of the road, you know, you better believe a game warden stop and back up a fellow law enforcement officer. But our prime function is game and fish enforcement. And that's got to do with, you know, rivers, lakes, the coast, all game species, plant species, fish. So anything that you can see when you walk outside, we're responsible for making sure it's there tomorrow.
Nice. That's an awesome responsibility. So let's use that to step into this idea. Tell me what's the most challenging part of your job.
Wow. I guess being multifunctional. And what I mean by that is I have a supervisor, and he has a supervisor, and it goes up the chain. But during normal operations, I may actually have physical contact with my immediate supervisor once a month.
Wow.
So you've got to be self-motivated, highly motivated, knowing how to segment what things are out there, put them in a good chronological order, and then deal with them. Active complaints, we call them. Somebody calls up and says, somebody's just shot a deer in my backyard. That's an active complaint. You got to put that on the front burner, not the back burner, because gotcha. It's happening now. Littering or somebody dumping or something that's already occurred and is no longer occurring, you may be able to take a little more time with that and set it on the back burner, but at some point in time, you've got to pick it up and re-engage it. So you've got to be able to multitask and keep the pegs moving. So to me, that's probably the most challenging part, because I'm pretty structure oriented. I like to put my ducks in a row and then don't reshuffle my ducks. I like my ducks the way they are, and I want to go through them chronologically. But sometimes, like we was talking about earlier, had a little rescue at 5 a.m. yesterday morning, and that shuffled my ducks. You know, I wasn't planning on getting up at 4:30 in the morning and going to Wheeler County and rescuing a guy off the river. So you have to be able to be responded, have all your equipment ready, and so you got to be able to willing to go off the fly, but yet at the same time, as soon as something occurs and it's over, you've got to be able to reshuffle on your own. So to me, that's the most challenging part, is to stay focused on your task at hand and be able to keep bringing things up that you set off to the sides, because, you know, we're humans. We like to set something off to the side, and if you're not careful, right, it stays over there. Right. So you have to be self-motivated. That's probably the most challenging part.
Gotcha. That's cool to know, because that's pretty wild. There's not a lot of people that can say that they may see their supervisor once a month.
Yeah.
So you would have to be driven internally to do what's expected to be done. Okay, it's time to talk some stories now, because in your world, just like you just said, you had to get up at 4:30 in the morning to go rescue somebody off the river. What's the craziest reason or half truth? And what I'm really doing is avoiding using the word lie.
Right.
But what's the craziest half truth you've been told by someone who is not doing what they should be doing?
Oh Lord, that is great. Well, when I've gone to the point where I tell somebody the truth's not in you, I guess that starts, doesn't it?
Yeah, I would think so.
The funny thing to me is in our work over time, I've been doing this 23 years, you kind of learn your constituents. I mean, in other words, I have people I'm on a first-name basis with. Not to make that good or bad, they're just folks I know.
Right.
And it's amazing to me that when we roll up and we go to asking you questions, people start doing what we call the tippy-toe dance. And they may or may not have done anything wrong, but that natural instinct to not exactly come forth with all the information. And so some folks will tell you stuff, and they hadn't even done anything, but it just, you know, well, how, you know, where'd you catch those fish? Well, I was up there. I saw you catch four of them right here. Just go and tell me. Let's move along. It amazes me that people that I would consider, you know, the gospel truth, that even they tippy toe around the truth sometimes, because they just, it's a natural instinct. The thing I figure is
worried they've done something wrong,
or they've done something and the gear's running. Did I do that today or yesterday? I can't keep them straight. I can't think of a single, you know, individual one that just jumps out at me.
That's all right. That's the first thing that came to mind. I can imagine walking up on, and what's cool is what you just said, which is that even if they haven't done anything wrong, some of them start telling you stories.
Right. That's right.
Am I not only supposed to catch one of those fish?
That's right.
Well, don't look in this cooler then.
That's right. That's right.
Obviously, I would think at some point you come in contact with wildlife and stuff. And back in June of this year, the area around Marietta had some bear sightings. I was wondering if you do have incursions of wildlife where you have to deal with them coming into the areas where people live and stuff like this, not necessarily just out on the river and so forth.
Yeah, good question. Actually, we do. We've even got a term for it. It's called nuisance wildlife. And it's just as important to manage the people population as it is the animal population. And what I mean by that is, I think we had talked earlier, we get calls of maybe somebody was from the metro area and they retired or got sick loved ones or whatever, and they moved down to this neck of the woods, and they give me a call. Well, I saw a fox at 11 o'clock last, 3 weeks ago in my backyard. And, you know, I guess my response is, and, you know. And so people management is just as important with wildlife management. Yes, we have bears in Dodge County. We've got alligators in Dodge County.
Oh, wow.
We've got deer. You know, we've got the gambit. And so all bears don't eat people. All alligators don't eat people. So it's just as important to manage the people and give them some common sense stuff, like, you know, maybe I wouldn't go outside and eat barbecue chicken, you know, and throw the bones in the backyard, right, because that draws in, you know, critters.
Right.
And bears and other things are critters. And so if you know, you're feeding your dog and pouring him a big bowl out there and then leaving the bowl out overnight, you're probably going to have visitors to that center later because they're not stupid. You know, a free buffet is a free buffet, no matter how you put it. And so managing the people and talking to them about, you know, how to best manage wildlife around them. And then you come to find out, well, gosh, there's been a bear in my backyard for 10 years and I've never seen him. You know, I know he's in your backyard because somebody's caught him on one of these game cameras,
right,
on one of these hunting clubs. And so I know he's been here for 10 years. So it just shows you that, you know, critters are around us. They're not out to get us. You know, let's do our part. Don't try to pet something. Don't, you know, don't antagonize it, poke it with a stick. And, you know, 99.99% of the time, wildlife just wants to be left alone and do their thing and survive. So people management, to me, is what's important about the bears and the other things we have. But we do. We have pretty much everything
nice
here.
Do you get called to deal with people having run-ins with rattlesnakes and things like that?
Well, yeah, more times than not, it's because it's in their basement or
that's
in their garage.
That's actually where I was going with that.
And that's a hard one for us to get across to folks is we're not animal control. You know, we get the right. we even get the dog calls. Well, don't you come get our dogs? No, we protect animals. We don't necessarily remove them. And that's gotten better over the years because I've got a website that's got hundreds, if not thousands, of what we call nuisance animal trappers. And
gotcha.
So for a fee, they will come out and remove critters from in and around your place. And so sometimes that's a deterrent to people and sometimes it's not. Well, maybe that snake getting quite bothering me so bad if it's going to cost me $450 to get it removed. You know?
Yeah,
so, you know, that dollar sign impacts a lot of times how serious the situation is. But I've done it, you know, if it's, you know, some elderly lady up the road and she's got a rattlesnake between her car and her door, I'll go get it. I mean, even though that's not what we do, you know, it's the right thing to do. So
that's nice.
Just go do it.
That's good. I just know that there's quite a bit of wildlife in our area.
That's
here.
Correct.
And it
shows up at inopportune times.
That it does. And you're talking to someone who woke up one morning and as I'm shaving, just gotten out of the shower and I'm shaving and I happened to just something caught me the corner of my eye and I looked over and I have a little friend in my bathroom right there where I just stepped out of the shower. It's a long black and looking all around in the same place. Had its head underneath the shower curtain looking in the tub. I'm like, where in the world did you come from?
No kidding. Yeah.
And it wasn't a rattlesnake. It was just...
Better you than the missus or the children, though, because it would probably have been a much...
Well, I got to tell you, it made my day. Oh, my heart was a little beating fast, and you know, I had all kinds of things going on there. But, you know, it's... And from that, and the, you know, you see wild turkey and deer, and I've seen fox early in the morning having some fun around some cotton bushes.
That's
and,
right.
And stuff like
I've said them many a times, early in the morning, late in the evenings, when you clock out that... They don't pay me enough. They pay me too much. You know,
neat.
I mean, you get to see some pretty cool stuff sometimes that
neat.
You never see sitting in an office, you know, pushing a pencil. Nothing wrong with it, but that never was my thing. And yeah, if you like to be outside and just have the opportunity to see some pretty neat stuff, you know, because we're usually hiding in the bushes anyway. And so when you get good enough that it's kind of fun that, you know, you're sitting back in camouflage in the bushes and the deer walk by you and they don't even know you're there.
Nice.
You know, that's pretty cool. You know,
nice.
It puts a smile on your face.
Well, let's talk a little bit real quick. I'm going to go in a different direction here for just,
okay.
Well, actually it's with animals, but with people. What are some kind of typical sorts of issues that you might have to deal with? Let's just pick on hunters for a minute.
Okay.
Are there some, you know, do you find yourself dealing with, because I know people hunt hogs around here. They, you know, all kinds of animals that they hunt. And I was wondering if that might be something that you might have to deal with from time to time where people maybe injuring themselves or actually just not doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, both. Believe it or not, one of the most common accident incidences that I've personally had to work over the years is tree stand accidents where – They put a tree stand in early in the season, or it's one they've built and they've hunted in several times, and, you know, opening weekend of deer season, you know, you're in a hurry because the sun's coming up and you're running late, and people make mistakes. They don't check their equipment. You know, the deer stand may be a little older than they recall, or they get in a hurry to climb the deer stand so they don't put on a safety harness when they know they should have. And so tree stand incidents, and you fall 25 feet and land on your back, you know, there's lots of times you need assistance getting out.
I can imagine.
It's gotten better today, but, and so you'd be surprised how many calls, you know, what was that old on TV, I've fallen and I can't get up. We get those kind of calls. And wow. But thank goodness, between cell phones, and they're able to ping cell phones and find your location, it helps us a lot of times in recovering people and getting them out safely. But yeah, accidents is probably up there. One of the things that kind of catch my eye, because every one of them, I can't recall one that where somebody said, I did everything right. And it, you know, they'll tell you I was stupid. You know, I did this or I did that, and I knew better. I mean, that's usually the number one thing.
Knew
is
better.
Man, I knew better. And
you know, it's funny is you're not that I've fallen out of deer stand, but you're talking to someone who's fallen off multiple ladders. Right?
Well, that counts. That's right.
And it's one of those things where one time actually sent me to the hospital, and so it's I can imagine, you know, you just I knew
and you probably said I knew better, didn't
yeah,
you?
So especially where if I look back at the one that sent me to the hospital where I put that ladder, okay,
yeah,
that was
that's right.
I should have known that wasn't going to work.
But convenience and saving time and so forth, we all do it. I do it too. You know, we take that shortcut, and lots of times it bites us. As far as violations and stuff, you know, we talked earlier about, you know, I'm on a first name basis with a lot of people, and some reasons are good and some aren't.
Right.
And you know, I call out, you know, Billy Bob, you know, Jones XYZ, what are you doing? You know, and you know, it gets to the point where they don't even bother to even say anything. It's like, yeah, you know,
wow.
And we just handle business and move along, because, you know, it's just got to that point. But, you know, I tell folks that there's a law for a law for a law within game and fish. I mean, it's almost like driving. Between, you know, traffic laws and game and fish laws, there are so many that if you don't violate one at some point in time, I don't know what you're doing, because it's unintentional.
I mean,
there's just so many. And they never was there to bite you and get you. It was like we were talking about earlier about all these excuses and this and that and the other. And so over time, you know, they come up with a law that will catch that one, you know.
Right.
So there's just a lot of things on the book. It can get really confusing. And so with us, we've got a kind of a protocol that we use for issuing a citation to somebody or taking them to jail. And what pops out the top is intent.
Gotcha.
You know, do I think this person intended to do this, or was it one of them uh-oh moments?
Right.
And then the second criteria that falls in there is the impact to the resource. Did he shoot a bald eagle and, you know, intent, no intent, should have known better. Or, you know, maybe he did, you know, he thought that was a doe, and when he got down, it was a little small, you know, spike buck that had 1-inch antlers, and he just didn't see them,
right.
You know. So we take intent and then the resource, you know, shooting that one small buck, is that going to be the end of the deer population? No. And so we try to take everything, and then my encounters with them. Have I had an encounter with this individual before?
Right.
And are we on first name basis? You know, that all factors in.
And they seem to keep telling the same story, huh?
Yeah. And so, what's that old saying? Common sense will get you a long way in life. So
right.
we try to, you know, we try not to be the Barney Fife and write the old lady for jaywalking. You know, that's not good for anybody. But the intentional violations that have impact to Georgia's resources, I'm looking for you. You're my customer.
Gotcha. I like that. That's good stuff. Well, let's as we start drawing to a close, let's say that you had a chance to talk to an auditorium full of juniors and seniors in high school. What message would you tell them about looking at your career path and your career field? What would you want to say to them?
Yeah, I think we would summarize it up with we're the law enforcement off the pavement. You know, if it's a river, stream, lake, dirt road, nature preserve, state park, WMA. If you like being outside and what I call contributing back to your community by protecting those resources, you're making sure that everybody around you gets to enjoy the same things. It's equal opportunity for all. And I like the fact that, you know, when you drive somewhere and somebody says, man, I just saw four turkeys standing on the side of the road down there. Yeah, I'm partly responsible for that because I make sure that those turkeys have the opportunity to stand there on the side of the road. And this high, fast-paced life we live in today and, you know, don't know what contributes to it, but, you know, hunting and fishing is actually on the decline. And, you know, I'm not an expert on it, but just common sense for me says between single parents and the fast-paced life, you know, Junior don't want to get off his Xbox game or his, you know, his iPod, iPad, whatever he's got in his hand, and it's just easier to sit in the air conditioning and play trinkets, and you just don't see that passing the torch down to the next generation of wanting to be outside. Right. And so that's probably one of our biggest challenges if that's your thing. If you like to be outside, you know, come on over. We're ready for you.
See, I think that'd be a huge attraction of your field. Is that? Yeah. I mean, that's why I asked that question way back when. Is that, you know, do you have an office?
That's
or
right.
Is your truck your
that's
office?
That's right.
And that's that. You know, that is just to me would be an amazing.
If
attraction.
You're a cubicle structured individual, God bless you, and you know, you move along because we're totally opposite of that. Like I said, I see my boss once a month. You know, not to say he doesn't call me, and we've got these computers,
right,
and he can see me, and we email, you know, all. Not to say he didn't keep in touch with me, but just that over the looking over your shoulder type.
That's not happening.
Super, you know, that's not happening. In fact, you're going to be down the road because they don't have the time or luxury to
gotcha.
Constantly tell you, Junior, you need to be doing this. Junior, you know, if he's telling you need to be doing something, you're not doing something right. You know, I tell my boss, you might have to jerk my chain and say, whoa, up a little bit, but kicking me to see if I'm still breathing isn't one of the things that we're looking for. So
nice. Well, let's, I like to ask all my guests if they have a teacher or someone who made a difference in their life in the past, and if you could say thank you to them, who would it be and why?
I mean, you can't help but have a lot of people impact your life. I mean, I've had great professors in college that, you know, if they was dull, humdrum, you know, you fell asleep as soon as you walked in the door, I mean, it would be rough. But I had Professor Dick Payne at ABAC, Abraham Baldwin Agriculture College, where I went in Tifton. You know, he made it fun and exciting. I liked it. You know, I was in the game anyway.
Excellent.
But to put that extra little oomph on it, a little personality and charisma goes a long way, you
right,
know. So
right.
Put it in there, and he had it. But I guess if I had to narrow it down and whittle to one person, I'd probably say it was probably my grandfather.
Excellent.
Because to get on this path, you have to start a little early. I don't think you can get in the conservation ranger game late in life. I mean, you've got to have some kind of desire to want to be there. So I was, like I said, the outdoor kid that probably put the toad in his pocket, you know. I was early, so I was in early. But, you know, going rabbit hunting or fishing with my granddad and helping him feed his beagles and, you know, sitting around at the campfires, listening to the fish tales, you know, the one that got away or the hunting, you know, that intrigued me. It's like, yeah, it's like stories, you know, that was a good one. I like to be able to tell one of those myself.
Nice.
And just taking the time, you know, and like we were talking about earlier, we're on the decline that I don't see that like we used to. You know, in the field, you don't see the kids out there like you used to. The average hunter I encounter now is mine and your age.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that's in the 40s, you know. Not to say there's not kids out there, but they're not there like they were when we were little.
Gotcha.
And, you know, you didn't have the Xbox game to keep you in the house. You wanted to go outside. And so technology's great, but I think there's some setbacks to it, too, and some of that's that our next generations aren't out there enjoying the rainbows and the sunrises and that sort of thing like maybe they should be.
It's a sad commentary, but at the same time, you got a field, you're in a career path that's right out there in
that's
the middle
it.
Of it.
I think so. I mean, they pay me, you know, I consider well, or I wouldn't have stayed 23 years, but I say it's the intangibles, you know, it's There's some things, you know, you see things on TV that was priceless. You know, this is priceless.
Yeah.
There's things that we encounter when you help somebody like we did earlier in February when it was 30-something degrees, their boat overturned.
Wow.
And the river was raging. It was above flood stage.
Oh, my gosh.
And everybody pretty much unspokenly was saying we were looking for a boat, not a person. And we find them alive, hanging to a tree, and they get in the boat, and you don't have to say anything. You're so glad to see them, and they're so glad to see you.
Right.
It's one of them, you know, hugging, bonding moments, you know, yes. Thank Jesus. And, you know, those kind of moments like that, you know, they stand out. It's like, yeah, I did something that was pretty cool there, you know, gave a guy a second chance, you know. And you run into them on the street, and they'll call you out, you know. I like that guy. He's my buddy.
That's nice. There's not many professions where you have that chance to have that impact on somebody's life.
That's
awesome. Right. Well, Alan, I can't thank you enough for spending time today. Where is a place that people could go to find more information?
And sure.
I'll put links in my show notes.
But. Yeah, we've got some phone numbers and stuff. Our Metter office, that's the one I told you it's 2 hours away near Statesboro. We've got a phone number. I'll give that one to you. And they've got pamphlets and brochures that you're be more than welcome to call you, and they could send you. It's 912-685-2145. 912-685-2145. We've also got a website. It's generic. It's got everything on there from parks and WMAs to hunting education classes to, you know, information on us and wildlife resources, but it's www.georgiawildlife, and that's all one word, spell out georgiawildlife.com, and you can go to that website, and you can find, they've got so many attachments and links and so forth that you could spend all day going to other places, so that's a central hub to find what you're looking for, but if you're looking for even boat registration or whatever, like, you can find it there.
Excellent. Well, Alan, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Links. I can't thank you enough for spending time with me. Enjoy that outdoors and be safe. And
I hope to see you there.
And I'll be out there. I like to fish.
Good
I'm not
deal.
Good at it, but I like to. Like
that, fish, that's why we call it fishing, not catching.
Yeah, I like that. I like that exactly. That would be just describes me right there. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello, listeners. We want to remind everyone to check out all of our digital content at teachinglearningleadingk12.com. That's teachinglearningleadingk12.com. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Just search Teaching Learning Leading K-12 in the iTunes store. Check back often for updates and new material.
Hang tight, everyone. I'm going to let go of the wall.
You have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, recorded in Eastman, Georgia, at the heart of Georgia Precinct.